During a bombardment, mutters propositions in physics. Leah, who wears a full beard and has a preference for the girls from officers' brothels. He swears that they are obliged by an army order to wear silk chemises and to bathe before entertaining guests of the rank of captain and upwards. And as the fourth, myself, Paul Baumer, and four are 19 years of age, and all four joined up from the same class as volunteers for the war. Close behind us were our friends, Jardin, a skinny locksmith of our own age, the biggest eater of the company. He sits down to eat as thin as a grasshopper, and gets up as big as a bug in the family way. Hai Vestus, of the same age, a peat digger, who can easily hold a ration loaf in his hand and say, "Guess what I've got in my fist?" Then Dietering, a peasant who thinks of nothing but his farmyard and his wife. And finally, Stanislaus Kaczynski, the leader of our group, shrewd, cunning, and hard-bitten, 40 years of age, with a face of the soil, blue eyes, bent shoulders, and a remarkable nose for dirty weather, good food, and soft jobs. Our gang formed the head of the queue before the cookhouse. We were growing impatient, for the cook paid no attention to us. Finally, Kaczynski called to him, "Say, Heinrich, open up the soup kitchen. Anyone can see the beans are done." He shook his head sleepily. "You must all be there first." Chardin grinned. "We are all here." The sergeant cook still took no notice. "That may do for you," he said, "but where are the others?" "They won't be fed by you today. They're either in the dressing station or pushing up daisies." The cook was quite disconcerted as the facts dawned on him. He was staggered. "And I have cooked for 150 men?" Krop poked him in the ribs. "Then for once we'll have enough. Come on, begin." Suddenly, a vision came over Chardin. His sharp, mousy features began to shine. His eyes grew small with cunning. His jaws twitched, and he whispered hoarsely, "Man, then you've got bread for 150 men, too, eh?" The sergeant cook nodded absent-minded and bewildered. Chardin seized him by the tunic. "And sausage?" Ginger nodded again. Chardin's chaps quivered. "Tobacco, too?"
"Yes, everything."
Chardin beamed.
"What a bean feast! That's all for us. Each man gets... wait a bit. Yes, practically two issues."
Then Ginger stirred himself and said, "That won't do." We got excited and began to crowd around.
"Why won't that do, you old carrot?" demanded Kaczynski. 80 men can't have what is meant for 150.
"We'll soon show you," growled Müller.
"I don't care about the stew, but I can only issue rations for 80 men," persisted Ginger. Kaczynski got angry. "You might be generous for once. You haven't drawn food for 80 men. You've drawn it for the second company.
Good. Let's have it then. We are the second company."
We began to jostle the fellow. No one felt kindly toward him, for it was his fault that the food often came up to us in the line too late and cold. Under shellfire, he wouldn't bring his kitchen up near enough, so that our soup carriers had to go much farther than those of the other companies. Now, Boke of the first company is a much better fellow. He is as fat as a hamster in winter, but he trundles his pots when it comes to that right up to the very front line. We were in just the right mood, and there would certainly have been a dust-up if our company commander had not appeared. He informed himself of the dispute, and only remarked,
"Yes, we did have heavy losses yesterday."
He glanced into the Dixie.
"The beans look good,"
Ginger nodded.
"Cooked with meat and fat."
The lieutenant looked at us. He knew what we were thinking, and he knew many other things too, because he came to the company as a non-com.